I know things you never see. You never see someone taking a shit while running at full speed.
Come on, Key, get rid of some of them turds in the shit box.
Welcome to the Bathroom Break Podcast with me, Rab himself.
We're here on the Bathroom Break Podcast with Rab himself, and my guest today is Brandon Novak.
Yeah.
A lot of you know him from CKY videos. He's also Jackass, Viva La Bam, and was a pro skateboarder for a long time, and has quite a hell of a story. I have some stories with him as well, but
we have a lot of stories. Yeah, that really have never been public.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but I wanted to kind of just for anybody that's going to listen, I wanted to kind of hear your story. You talk about it a lot, you know, in your book Dream Seller, and then you've got that new book, The Brandon Novak Chronicles, that just came out, and I want to get into that more later. But
sure.
But just kind of wanted to get a little bit of a background of your fucking crazy life.
You know, it's to put it in like a Reader's Digest version. From a very young age, my mother always told me, show me who you walk with and I'll tell you who you are. And that kind of transcended into social acceptability equaling personal recovery, which then transcended into filling this internal void with the external solution, right? So at the age of 7, I got my first skateboard. And that night when my mother put me to bed, she said, Brandon, what do you want me to do with the skateboard? And I said, I want it in bed with me. She said, why? I said, because if I die, I want it to go with me. You know, it was like God had came down and handed me the Holy Grail in the form of a skateboarder. I knew I was going to be a professional skateboarder. Despite any and all adverse consequences that came my way, I did what I had to do to get what I wanted to get. And from 7 to 15, I ate it, I breathed it, I slept it, I dreamt it. At 15, I was designing my pro model.
Maybe
for
fucked it while you were in bed with it.
I'm sure. Yeah. I came on it many times. Absolutely. Yeah. And then at the age of 14, I was the first skateboarder ever in the world to be endorsed by Gatorade. They were flying me out to Chicago to the Quaker Oats building. They'd put me on one treadmill, Michael Jordan on a treadmill next to me, and they would put these wires in our noses and down our throats and give us each Gatorade to see the effects it has on different sports players. Later on down the line, I ended up in those movies, Jackass, and the movies like broke box office records, and I was like doing things that equated to success or happiness that some even dream of doing. And then a bit more down the line, I ended up, you know, writing a book. And keep in mind, when the book was published, I had no high school diploma. I had no GED. But I'm no fool by any means. My mother was a nuclear physicist on the board of Mercy Hospital. My brother is a practicing attorney in the White House who practices pensions and benefits. My father died as a direct result of the disease of addiction, right? So I live with that after-school special of what I was never going to become. I did not like that man, and I hated drugs and alcohol even more because I saw what it made him do to me, my mother, my brother, and my sister. So actually, everything I did, I excelled because I was not going to become that man. And then I write this book. I get my GED after the book's published in prison. And the only reason why I got my GED in the joint was because A, I had the time, and B, if I passed the GED in the joint, I got a pizza party that was supplied by Domino's. Right?
It's like that thing when you were younger and you read enough books, you get a personal pan pizza if you get the stars.
Yeah, yeah.
Except you're in jail. And
but something quite spectacular happened in that moment that I realized when I was incarcerated is I aced that GED like a fucking Harvard graduate. I did not miss one question. And the reason why I did so well is because it was my idea, right? The reason why bad is so many treatment centers, so many 12-step meetings, so many doctor's offices, so many psychiatrist offices, is because it wasn't my idea. Because my resume stated that I was smart and I had accomplished some things, tell me what I need to do, I tell you I need to fuck off. Because the reality is I'm an addict, I'm an alcoholic, I'm defiant by nature, I don't do well with authority, and I will not conform unless it's my idea, right? Because
right.
I possess this job, and this job consists of knowing everything.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
So while I'm in the joint, I get my GED. But prior to that, my first book is published. Now I'm a published author who's written an autobiography addiction memoir. Now I'm a published author who's written a book on addiction. Now I'm a published author who's written a book on addiction that becomes a New York Times seller, right? So now I'm receiving hundreds of thousands of pieces of mail from all over the world of people like you saying, I read your book. I didn't want my story to get as bad as yours. I have 30 days sober. Of people like you saying, I read your book. I understand why my son picks the bottle over coming to have dinner with me on the weekends. It's not that I was a bad dad. It's that he suffers with the disease of addiction. I internalized that as I wrote that special book that we read in our 12-step program, which is basically like the Bible to a holy, to a churchgoer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought I had saved this book that wrote this book that was saving millions of
people's
lives.
You're the second coming of Bill W.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and the reality is, I wrote that book while sniffing tons of cocaine and drinking tons of wine, and now I suffer with this disease that tells me I don't have a disease. And it's so powerful, it makes me believe the unbelievable, right? Because it lies to me in my own voice. So if your diagnosis is an addict or an alcoholic, this cannot be debated. You can look it up in any medical book you want. If your diagnosis is an addict or an alcoholic, that disease left untreated equals death. It's a fatal disease, right? But as far as I'm aware of, it's the only disease that I possess that's fatal that tells me I don't have a disease on a daily basis. So if you diagnose me with HIV, I'm rushing to the hospital to get medication. I don't want to die. Fatal disease. Diagnose me with cancer. I'm rushing to the hospital to get chemo. I don't want to die. Fatal disease. Diagnose me as an addict or an alcoholic. I need a glass of wine or a bag of heroin to figure out what the fuck's wrong with you for diagnosing me with that disease.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
And it's just as fatal as the first two diseases. But left to my own devices, I'll finish this podcast and I'll go right down the way and cop some Chiba. Yeah, and it'll make complete sense to me. And what my own devices looks like is Brandon attends Brandon's Anonymous, Brandon sponsors Brandon, and Brandon becomes Brandon's God. And then for the life of me, how the fuck am I back on the corner of Eastern Avenue in Patterson Park selling my ass for $40?
Right.
That wasn't my goals. That wasn't my dreams. That wasn't my intentions. That wasn't my plans as a kid.
Wait, it wasn't?
No, you know, I mean, believe it or not, despite how I display myself, that's not what I wanted. I had goals. I had dreams. I had admirations. I came from better. I knew better. I lived with that after school special of what I was not going to become. Strap me up to a polygraph, I would pass with flying colors. I'd have every police officer in the world saying, pat me on the back, saying, boy, we wish everyone was as honest as you.
Yeah.
You know,
remember when we did that polygraph thing on Viva La Man?
That was a doozy.
Dude, it's funny because, like, as you talk about it, it's funny for me because I was witness to yours, you know, your addiction throughout a bunch of the years. And I watched you go back to Baltimore, then come back with some chip. Like, and I was drunk as shit all the time and doing other drugs and whatever throughout that whole time. But I had an ability to just smile and everything was cool with me.
Yeah.
I would see you come back and you'd have like a 9-month chip and I think it was just some fake chip.
Yeah, you're like, that's bullshit.
Because
we're slicing shots in the corner.
Yeah. And you're like, but you know, I'm not shooting heroin, but it's cool if I drink this red wine. I'm like, I don't know how that works, but I don't think that's how it works. You know?
Yeah.
But whatever, let's go drink. You know, and so like I you know, kind of was always around that and I was drinking hard too. And it was funny because it was probably a month ago or something, randomly I was looking at stuff on YouTube, and then like the Haggard documentary came up, and in the Haggard documentary it talks about like me being an alcoholic, and they go through this whole thing about like Rab's an alcoholic, and April's like, he needs rehab, and then like Alex, the one dude, was like, yeah, you need rehab, mate, you know. And I kept being like, oh, I'm an alcoholic, but I get shit done, who cares, you know.
Yeah.
And
that was our mentality.
Yeah, man. And then it goes into yours about heroin and like, you know, that issue with like when you were just kind of lying and had it like in the bushes and Ryan caught you. And
yeah,
and just seeing that stuff, I was like, man. And if you look at it now, all these years later, I'm sober, you're sober.
Yeah.
And like, it's like we knew it then, but we just weren't ready to make a change. And then when the time came, like you said, once it was your idea.
Yeah.
Same thing for me. Once it was my idea.
I excelled at a fucking rapid pace.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And it's just crazy, though, like how much... You know, like, because I always felt like, for me, from my first drink, like, long before my first drink, I was alcoholic. Like, I used to eat candy like an alcoholic. I used to just, like, do stupid shit, like, alcoholically before I even drank. And then when I drank, it was like, hell yeah, I could just black out and whatever. And then everybody would encourage it because I was a fun drunk, you know? And, like...
And after all, you kind of made a living on it.
Yeah.
You know, the more outrageous your antics were, the more in demand you were.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then it's awesome because you go, cool, they're paying me to do this, and I love this.
Yeah. and that's the thing, yeah. You know, we both would do appearances in nightclubs, right?
Yeah.
And you take pictures, you sign autographs, you have a free bar tab, and whatever drugs you really want, they'll get for you. And then at the end of the night, you get a check for X amount of dollars.
Yeah.
So, like...
way too much amount of dollars for just, like, what did I do to that? I just got fucked up. Like, there was a... Because there was a point where, in the beginning, where we would do, like, jackass stunts, you know, and you're sort of performing a show for them in front of a stage, like you're doing the clothesline bike, you're smashing the light bulbs, you're doing the ladder to ladder jumps, and you're doing that stuff. And then it just progressively went to, like, I'll be there and I'll be drunk. And that's what you're paying me for.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
it.
Like, it got to that, and I'm like not even doing any of the stuff that they have me there. And it's just like, where's the booze? Where's the women? Where's the drugs? And then here, give me my money.
And that was the thing. I would continue to go to meetings, right? In between partying, not partying, whatever. I would always go to meetings, and they would tell me that my life was unmanageable. And I believed that my life was unmanageable. Then I would do an appearance at a nightclub, get paid to do it, give me free drugs and alcohol. And then a check, which I deposit into my bank account. But my bank account does not seem unmanageable. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I have this delusional alcoholic mind that lies to me in my own voice that makes me believe the unbelievable, that tells me I don't possess the disease, which I clearly know I possess.
Right.
You know? So it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, especially at that point in life, too. I think, you know, it, like you said, you're being rewarded for that behavior, and then it's hard to... Because it's hard to then understand, like, well, wait... I'm doing well.
Yeah.
But I'm not.
Externally,
well.
I'm doing fucking great.
Yeah, yeah. Internally.
Internally, I want to kill. And I say, you know, externally, things were great. Internally, I was the kind of alcoholic that wanted to kill himself on a daily basis, but I didn't want to hurt myself in the process.
I was fucking horrible
at suicide. I kept waking up.
Yeah, yeah.
And I found myself at a point in life where I was so low to the curb like a skyscraper.
Yeah, yeah.
Know? But I had to get to a point. My process was my process, and it takes what it takes until it takes. But I would see people get sober and stay sober. You being one of them. And I would watch from afar. I'm very hypersensitive to my surroundings. I'm alert. I'm attentive. I don't really miss much. And I would see these people, you included, doing it. And I would go to those meetings where we go to, and I would see them doing it. And I'm like, it works for them, but they just don't, they didn't see what I've seen. They haven't experienced what I've experienced. They haven't lived what I lived. And all that was my disease-riddled mind talking to me.
Right.
You know, because it wanted me to stay disconnected, isolated, you know, on the outskirts looking in.
Because I did that too.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, well, dude, I'm some small-town kid that then all of a sudden got recognition and traveled all over the world and experienced all this stuff, and I'm at Hollywood parties, and I'm on TV, and I'm this, and I'm all this. What the fuck does this Joe the accountant know about this shit? He doesn't know anything about it. And so I would justify that in my head, too. And then I would try to stop drinking on my own. And, like, I stopped one time for, like, 2 months, and I was, like, just drinking water, like, on a health kick, and I stopped drinking, and I stopped doing drugs. And I was like... see, I got this. Like, it was two months full. Like, and that was like a long fucking time.
Absolutely.
Me. But 2 months, I was like, yeah, I'm fine. And it was my birthday. So I was like, well, why don't I should have, you know, I should drink a little bit tonight.
I deserve this.
Yeah. I have been working hard.
And, 2 months.
So I did. And then I drank on my birthday, and I woke up in the morning with a bag of Coke and a bag of weed in my pocket, completely blacked out, didn't remember a fucking thing that happened on my birthday. I remember the first drink.
Yeah.
And I don't remember anything after that. And that was like, fuck, how did I do that?
Yet again.
Yeah, like immediately.
It wasn't your plan.
Yeah,
it was not your intentions.
I was going to have one fucking margarita.
Absolutely.
Because
fucking margarita. For fuck's sake, Brad, did you have an umbrella in it too? God damn you.
Absolutely, dude. Salted rim. Oh. That's what I'm talking about.
No wonder I have the cheap headphones here. You spent all your money on margarita mix. Fuck off.
I'm just down there in Margaritaville just hanging out. No, dude, that was the plan, was to have one, and then I blacked out, drugs in the pocket. I had been doing drugs all night and whatever, and I'm like, what the fuck went down? But it was that's how quickly it happens for me, and so I know that going forward, like, yeah, dude, I'll always convince myself that I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm like I'm you know, like in the program, if you say, like, I'm 8 years and 10 months, like, 8 years. Okay. I got 8 years. But in September, it'll be 9 years.
Wow.
And yeah, thanks, brother. And still, though, if I don't go to a meeting, if I don't do the shit I need to do, then I'm all of a sudden going, am I really an alcoholic? Because look at all this time.
Yeah.
My life is back together.
It's now like, you know some shit, which is even more scarier.
Yeah. Because then you can manipulate that situation.
Yeah.
And that's what we're all real good at, is figuring out a way to manipulate that situation. And I know that you are, because you had more... You had more of the program in your head when we were younger like that, and I didn't.
Yeah.
And you would like know that stuff, and then still, and then
which
you
really
manipulate.
Only hurt me as opposed
right,
to help
right,
me.
Right. And then you know, eventually when it was time, you got it. But yeah, for me, you know, it's crazy that you could have all that time, and then you can go look. Like I have a good life. I have a nice place to live. I have a wife. I have a job. I have things that I do. I have all that, and alcohol took all that away from me, and I didn't have any of that when I was totally down and completely alone. I didn't want to be around anybody. I didn't see you. I didn't see Bam. I didn't see any of my other friends, and I was like, I just want to get away from everybody, and lost my place. I had to
sell
my place.
I remember that. I remember when you bought it and how happy you were, and then I remember you losing it because I was so impressed that you bought a home.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck, you bought a home.
Yeah.
And then I remember you losing the home.
Yeah, then it's like later, and then I had to get rid of my car, go get this cheap little thing. And,
yeah.
And but still, even then, I'm like all pissed off. And I'm like, I got to drive this. And then now I look back, I'm like, dude, I still, like, my mom helped me get a car still. Like, and I live with my mom. And I wasn't homeless, but I should have been, and I should have been all these things, and I was so ungrateful for all that shit.
You can't see that moment.
But then when you look back, you go, oh my God, like that's how my life was. Like, even in my bad times, it was still better than some people's. But it's just crazy. And then you build a great life through sobriety, and then still on some random days be like, should I burn this all down?
Yeah,
you know? Yeah.
But the thing is, ignorance is bliss. But when you know you're to be held accountable, right? And they told me in the beginning of my sobriety, someone shared with me, said, you know, you suffer from a disease called alcoholism, not alcoholism.
Yeah.
And you can't stay sober on yesterday's sobriety. And my sobriety has a shelf life of 24 hours, right? So I simply wake up each day and do a few simple things along the way each day to maintain my sobriety. But every morning when I wake up, I wake up with untreated alcoholism, you know? So I get on my knees, I talk to my higher power, and I just keep it to the basics, because they said stick to the basics, kid, so God willing, you don't have to go back to the basics.
Yeah.
You know, because I can get lost in the accessory of things and life and words and women and fucking money and the glitz and the glamour se. And I'll lose focus on my primary purpose. I've seen me do it. That's why I keep my past married to my present, because the moment I forget where I come from, I will return. Why? Because just what we were talking about, I will minimize it.
Yeah.
I will say, hey, I just celebrated 3 years of sobriety. Hey, I work in the drug and alcohol treatment field. Hey, I have insurance. God forbid I had to go to treatment. I can get in with one phone call. Hey, I just bought a home. Homeless is a big part of my story, but now I own a home.
Yeah,
financially, I'm pretty good, so like, fuck. And it'll be different this time. And the reality is that's...
Nope.
But the good thing is after drinking for 24 years, IV heroin and cocaine use for 20 years, the euphoria of it being a good time has worn off. You know, thank God. I don't know what it is, but thank God this 3 years and some change that I have now has been relatively simple. And I don't know if it's because, I haven't been tempted by a drink or a drug. Now, I don't know if it's because I was on fire when I walked into the 12-step program and I was demoralized in just such a fashion from drugs and alcohol. I was beaten into a state of reasonableness that now you have my attention. And I was met by the gift of desperation, which is the God of my understanding. And then it transcended into the willingness. And I'm willing to do whatever you suggest, because clearly my way doesn't work. And your way does, because you're coming up on 9 years. Or if it's, I always say, the God of my understanding brought me to the 12 steps, and the 12 steps brought me back to the God of my understanding. I don't know what it is, but I'm very proactive in my sobriety.
Yeah, and what I heard just right there is just the willingness to do it somebody else's way. Because that's the biggest thing, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like
at least,
I told you.
At least what I've been taught and what I learned is that the minute I think I got it. Because I'll do that. I'll be like, yeah, cool. Like, give my will over to some God and all that. Yeah, here you go. Wait, hold on. Let me have that back.
Just for 5 minutes. Yeah, I got this.
And then I'll take it off the rails. But
It's like my character defects. I don't want to get rid of them. They serve me. I like to do whatever my defects are until they don't serve me. And the reason why they don't serve me is because I get caught doing them.
Yeah,
right? So let's say it's women. I'm cheating. Yeah. I got three women. I'm cheating with one or all three, banging each one of them out. And then that's my defect, right? It's my character defect, women. And I ask God to remove them when he sees fit, when he sees fit.
Yeah.
Usually that happens by the one woman catching me about the other woman. They all tell all three, and then tomorrow I have no women to fuck. God, I'm not going to rightfully give
he
that.
He sees fit?
Yeah. It's like, you know.
Yeah. No, exactly.
So the thing is for 20 years I possessed that job, and this job put me in a lot of positions I didn't like to be in and a lot of feelings I didn't like to feel, and that job consisted of knowing everything. And my resume stated I knew some shit, so you tell me what I need to do, I tell you what I need to fuck off. Walking into my 13th inpatient treatment center, my mother had bought me a plot. People had taken life insurance policies out on me. I just woke up from being on life support for 7 days. I've been medevaced to 4 different hospitals in 4 different states from 4 different overdoses. My mother had financially sold 3 homes to financially pay for me to go to 2 treatment centers. She depleted several savings accounts. She has nothing left to give, so she's went to God with one prayer, and that prayer consisted of, God, please cure him, kill him, or kill me. I can't take it anymore. Walking into my 13th inpatient treatment center, my worldly possessions consisted of 8 scarves, 2 jackets, 3 socks, 1 stick of deodorant that fit into a bag that doubled as a pillow, 4 cigarette butts that I picked up off the street, a needle, a spoon, and a restraining order. I walk into my 13th inpatient treatment center, and some things that happened, and I don't have time to get into them, but my clothes were literally ripped off my back, and I didn't have underwear on, and this 19-year-old...
Oh, Nudie Novak came out to play.
He had one more appearance to make. This time it was in a Catholic charity's rehab.
Yeah.
They weren't too impressed to see me.
Perfect.
I was not getting paid. I actually paid this treatment center $3 to come in, and this 19-year-old fucking text worker, he's like, Mr. Novak, you're back. And I'm like, aren't you a fucking genius? You don't miss anything, do you?
Yeah.
And he's like, your clothes aren't rehab oriented. You need some underwear. You need some sweatpants. You need some slides. And I had none of those items. So he takes me downstairs to the basement of a Catholic charity's rehab, and as this 19-year-old kid thumbs through this box looking for a pair of second, third, fifth, 10th hand pair of used underwear, I'm praying to God he finds them, right? That I'm praying to God that he finds them. Praying to God for a pair of 10th hand used underwear. And he doesn't find them, right? But what he does find is a pair of size 40 women's sweatpants with no drawstring, a woman's tank top, and a pair of size 13 Jesus sandals, right? So in that basement, that Catholic charity's rehab, I was met by the gift of desperation, God, right? My higher power. And with that came a sense of willingness unlike anything I've ever experienced. But what I realized in that basement was that job that I possessed of knowing everything, I came to the realization, what I know is that I don't fucking know. And my best thinking continuously gets me here time and time again. And that was like the most profound revelation. So when I realized or came to the understanding that I know that I don't know, it was like, dude, you do, man. So just show me. You know, and I followed. If you told me to fucking stand on my head in the corner naked and jerk off for 4 months straight, I would have done it.
Yeah, with a thumb in the ass.
That's what I'm gonna do. Apple in my mouth. Whatever you want, dude, I'll do it.
Yeah, no, but that's it. I mean, that's it. That's it. And I think, like you said earlier, the gift of desperation. That's it. Like, if you don't have that yet, then you're not ready yet.
No.
And so. Like, you notice that. Like, that's probably the smartest thing you ever realized in your life was that you don't know shit.
Yeah. And you know what? Every other time I went into treatment, I went in there with a plan, right? This particular treatment I've been to 4 previous times, and they would say, okay, Mr. Novak, your insurance covers 90 days. And I'd say, in theory, 90 days sounds great, but in reality, I'm more of a 45-day kind of fella. Yeah. I have this woman
I'm
to do.
I'm going to run this.
Yeah, I would tell the counselors how to counsel me, right? Fuck, I'm a published author who's written a book on addiction. What do you mean? I fucking know some shit, you know? But I would go in there with a plan, and all plans are expectations, and expectations are nothing but unfulfilled resentments. So the moment you don't do as I think you should do, say as I think you should say, or feel as I think you should feel, I'm fucking furious. So this time, demoralized in just such a fashion from drugs and alcohol, beaten into a state of reasonableness, I walk in there with no plan. And that no plan has resulted in the best of plans. Right. That lack of plan has produced the best of plans.
Well, realizing that it's not your plan.
Yeah, because I gave it over. You know, when I've learned in this process, when I want to make my God laugh, I tell him how my day is going to go.
Yep.
You know, I don't fucking run this shit. And I know that I don't. And I make sure I don't try to get credit for what I didn't do. Because then all of a sudden, I'll think I'm the all-powerful. Then Brandon goes to Brandon's Anonymous. Brandon sponsors Brandon. Brandon's Brandon's God. Then I'm fucking sucking dick for another bag.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. Well, and then I think that's what happens is like, you know, especially people like us that had some success in the public eye, you then can justify, well, I knew what I was doing. I was just like, a lot of that is luck, man. A lot of that kind of fell into the way it did. Yeah, maybe you did the work to be presented in that thing. But if you look at back when Jackass started, none of us, no one, Knoxville, Tremaine, any of those, nobody knew that would be successful. It was like, put together this pilot, put that on, and maybe they'll want another episode.
God willing.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden they do, they order more, and it becomes a thing, and then it's like all, no one could have predicted that, though. Like, how could you ever know that? And so to like, you know, for me at a time, you become like, I don't want to go into rehab. I don't want to go to these places because these people know who I am.
Yeah.
And I did this and this. And like, I had that shit because when I first got there, you know, like I'm like ready to die. I was suicidal. I had drank myself to a place that was just unhealthy. I had a seizure when I was coming off the alcohol. And I was in this place going, you know, like I'm looking at death right now. And I need to figure out what the fuck to do because I did way too many pills and I did way too much coke when I would be drinking. Mm-hmm. So because I drank to a blackout, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing while I was drinking. And so that stuff is dangerous as shit.
Yeah.
You know, like, because for whatever reason I live, but you see a lot of people die doing way less than I did because the amount of blackout, the amount that I drank when I drank was like fucking stupid. So when I got there and I was doing these meetings, then you have these kids come over like, dude, Rab, did you marry the Russian bride? Like, oh my
shit,
God.
You're not there to fucking talk about.
And like, it's like, dude, I don't regret the past. I think that stuff was funny. I had a great time. It was hilarious at the time. But while I'm like fucking suicidal and like coming off of drugs, alcohol and all that shit and basically this raw nerve of trying to like figure out how to fucking live life on life's terms, I'm going, dude, fuck you. I don't want to talk to you about that shit, like, or whatever. Yeah. And I'm just like, and I wasn't like blatantly rude, but I was kind of just like, oh yeah, cool, man. I'm not here for that. I'm just trying to like,
because your life depends.
I'm trying to listen to the meeting and try to.
You're here.
Yeah, exactly. And then you get this, oh, that dude's a fucking asshole. Like, these people are shitheads. Like, all those jackass, and they would say it in the meetings, like, those jackass dudes are fucking assholes. And I'm like, dude, whatever you need to say to make yourself feel better, I gotta like not give a fuck about that.
Yeah,
because there was a long time where I was out like, and it was just, oh, Rab's smiling, Rab's laughing, like, and it was like, oh, I'm just gonna please everybody. Yep. I gotta be nice to every single person,
man.
and do all that stuff, and it nearly fucking killed me.
I always say, man, for years I would go in and I would save my face, right, because I didn't want people to talk bad about me, not accept me, not approve of me, not want me, and I would save my face in those meetings and treatment centers. I would save my face, and I would literally lose my ass on the street corners, right? So then when the pain got great enough, I came in there and I saved my ass, and somewhere along the line, my ass and my face kind of correlated, you know, because the pain got so great. You know, I'm like, you know what? Your fucking opinion of me does not pay my bills. Your thoughts and feelings towards me will not keep me sober another day, and how you feel about me will not give my mother a sound night's sleep. You know, so I'm like, I just kind of realized that sobriety is an internal job, right? It could not come from any pussy. It cannot come from any paycheck. It cannot come from any home. It cannot come from your wallet or it had to be internally done.
Yeah. No, and it is, it's 100% that. And I think it was like, it's not that I don't care what other people think, because a lot of people love to say that, but we all fucking care.
Right. Yeah.
And but it was more that, like, I gotta take care of me first and foremost, and then you know, then I'm able to kind of get out there and talk about the Russian mail order bride or these things like or whatever, because that stuff's hilarious. And I've gotten to a place in my life where I look back on it with fond memories, and I had a blast, and it was funny and fun, and it was some of the best times of my life, you know, with you, with all the guys. And it took me a minute to get there, though.
Yeah.
You know, and of course there's always like the, yeah, what happened with you and Bam, or like, yeah, what happened? And I'm like, dude, I just needed to get away for a minute so that I could take care of me, save my own fucking life, and then get right. Because the thing about me, I think that, like, it's like if you look at you and if you look at Steve-O, like, you guys were, like, in people's face with your problem.
Yeah.
And I was, like, a sneaky, like, I'm not going to let anybody know. I'm just going to go over into my house and just do some coke and then drink and then be alone. And then nobody has to be around me and nobody sees that I'm doing all this. Mm-hmm. And that was like my thing, was being that creepy lurker that's like trying to get away from everybody so I can do drugs and drink the way I want without anybody taking notice or saying like there's a problem there.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, on tour with CKY, on tour doing the promotional stuff for the shows and stuff, I was drinking like a fish and it was okay and it was accepted. But like I told a story once about like, I ended up like sleeping in this family's home, like while like they were there. Like I got drunk as shit. I went into this bar and I'm drinking all these shots and like people were going, oh, it's Rab. Dude, do a shot with me. So about like 30 minutes I was there, I did 20 shots down the bar. You know, and it was like in 30 minutes, dude. Like, and you're just like boom, boom, and they're like, oh, I'll never be with you again, whatever. And then I'm like, oh, and then I'm taking a pill, and then I'm drinking this, and I'm like, oh, fuck, you know, like I just took so much in, and I said to my buddy, I was like, dude, I got to go outside and try to like throw this up or something, you know. And I went outside and I sat down, and I was all a mess, and I threw up, and then I passed out in the alley, and I woke up when the sun came up, I was like.
That moment of clarity.
Yeah, well, I go, oh, we must have been partying at that house last night. So I walk into this random house, and I walk up the steps, and I see, like, this two dudes on the couches and, like, trash. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, we're partying here. So I go upstairs, and I see a girl in the bedroom, and like, yeah, and then I go into the master bedroom, and I fall asleep. And I wake up 3 hours later, and I'm like, yo, this is, like, this does not look like a college house. Like, and it was like this nice master bedroom.
Wow.
I fucking slept in these parents' bed. Like, and all I could come up with is they must have, when the sun got up, they must have went out for a walk on the beach. And I slept in their bed. And then I walk down the steps. I look across the thing. And it's like this 14-year-old girl. I go downstairs and it's like two like 10-year-old dude, like boys.
Wow.
On the thing. And it's like a pizza box and a fucking soda. And I'm like, oh shit, like, you know, and like I'm like I slept in this family's house,
yeah,
she's like drunk, you know, yeah. And I get out of there and I'm like, damn, dude, like if they were there, like that dad had every right to shoot me.
It turned out really
bad.
But
I mean, that's the way I drank like that. I had the at the Viper Room, I think you might have been there. It was like we were drinking with all these Hollywood celebrities, and then Bam's like, you should slow down. I'm like, fuck you. And I keep drinking, and I walk out I stumbled out of the back of the Viper Room. I end up in some parking garage underneath a bunch of rolled up carpets. I get out, I check my ass, I check my wallet. I'm like, I'm not raped, I didn't get robbed.
Sure.
Fuck it. I pull my pants down and I shit on this Mercedes, and I go out and I'm walking around going, where the fuck am I? Couldn't figure out where the fuck I was or how I even got there. And then I ended up getting a cab down to Orange County to get to Darren Miller's house.
Yeah.
Because all the guys were there. And then I get in there, I'm like, you fucking guys left me. Everyone's like, fuck you, dude. We were calling the hospitals, the cops, everyone. We don't know where the fuck you were. And I'm like, oh, okay, shit, my bad.
Yeah. Let me have a drink to sort it out.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. Like, I mean, the whole way home, I'm fucking, you know, like, eating weed and whatever and whatever pill I have and doing that. And then I get there and it's like, all right, let's do it again.
Because we find ourselves where the abnormal becomes the normal.
Right? Oh, yeah.
We're living on this animalistic level.
And you surround yourself with that.
Yeah.
And that's what I always laugh because I would say to myself, like, oh, like Novak's doing heroin. And then you'll be like, well, Rab drinks like a fish.
I'm not that bad.
Yeah. And then,
not that bad. Yeah.
And then, you know, and then you look at whoever else and you're always pointing the finger. And I remember what was so funny to me. So right after Ryan passed away, Everybody was meeting up at like 15 North to just kind of get together and see each other. This is a few months like right after. And you had like been in jail.
Yeah.
And you just got out. And you're out and you're like standing there drinking like red wine and I'm sober. I was like 2 years sober at that point. I was a year and 9 months sober when Ryan died. And so I was about 2 months sober right at that point and like, or 2 years sober. And you're standing there drinking and you go, yeah, what's different with you? And I was like, oh, I got sober. And then you're like, ah, man, good. You needed it. While you're drinking, you just got out of jail. You're drinking.
I just did a year in the joint.
Yeah, and you're telling me about these jailhouse workouts and all this stuff. And I was like, all right.
You know, deflection at its best. It's not me. It's them. External
situation. Yeah, exactly. And in your own addiction, you justify like, well, good. Like, Rab needed it because he was a problem drinking. Like, but I don't have a problem drinking. I just have a problem with heroin.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you're just transferring your addiction. And
the thing is,
stuff.
I really believed it.
No, I know.
I said it.
I know. Like, I saw it in your head.
Deflecting. It was like, no, I'm really happy for you.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah.
And you were like genuinely happy for me and like believing like, well, you needed it. I don't need that, but you needed it.
My turning point, like where I realized enough was for, you know, 20 plus years, every time I had a glass of wine, I sniffed a line of blow, I ate a pill, I shot a bag of heroin, every time without fail, the delusional effect was always produced, which would allow me to escape the reality that I had created for myself, right? So now I'm okay with letting men blow me. Now I'm okay with my mother buying me a plot because I start to sober up for a second. The moment of clarity sets in. I do another shot of heroin. Delusional effect produced. I escape the reality that I created for myself. And now I'm a 35-year-old homeless heroin addict. Just got kicked out of my mother's restraining order. Nowhere to go. And I find myself in this shooting gallery. And I have a pile of heroin and a pile of cocaine in front of me. $180 worth. I remember it very vividly. And I fill up a big speed ball on this needle and I put it in my arm, and if I did it now I would surely die. If anyone did it that gets high, they'd fucking, you know, very close if not overdose. And I put this shot in me and that delusional effect was not produced, which meant I could not escape the reality that I created for myself, meaning that the moment of clarity that I lived in was high and sober. Right. What do I do when it stops working? I couldn't get high or drunk enough to escape the reality. It literally had stopped fucking working. And that's when I'm like, dude, this sucks.
Well, and it's funny because I've heard that story of, you know, like when you're in, cause we're so unique, you know?
Yeah.
But I've heard that story of where it physically stops working.
I swear to God.
But it's crazy because long before that even happens, it stopped working because like they say, like alcohol or drugs or whatever is not your problem, it's your solution.
Absolutely.
And so it was your solution for all those years, and it stopped working long before it actually physically stopped working for you, but you didn't get to see that. And then what your moment of clarity, like you just explained, was that it physically stopped.
Yeah.
Like for me, it was like, well, like, it wasn't working because I financially fucked my whole world up. I had lost my house. I had this. I had that. You know, like, all those things.
Yeah, yeah.
I could still produce the level of escape that I needed with it.
Yeah.
But every single time that if I ever tried to sober up for a moment, it was a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
Anxiety-ridden, depressed-ridden nightmare of hell and just full panic attacks and, like, crazy. I couldn't read. I couldn't do anything. But it's funny that you talk about that too, like that it physically. So like you progress further along in it, and luckily you had that moment of clarity while, like, it didn't work for you.
What the fuck do I do? I've given it everything. I've given it homes. I've given it women. I've given it careers. I've given it friends. I've given it family. I've given it my fucking sexuality when it calls for it, and you name it, I give it. And then all of a sudden at 35, the one thing I've depended on, I've counted on, I've loved, I've cherished, says, I'm done with you. What the fuck? I've came way too far to turn back. I literally have given you everything. And I stand before you, a 35-year-old homeless heroin addict with 8 scarves, 2 jackets, 3 socks, 1 stick of deodorant, 4 cigarette butts, a needle, a spoon, and a restraining order. what the fuck do I do now?
Yeah.
But get sober.
Yeah.
And I kicked and screamed the whole way every time going to those facilities and going to those 12-step meetings. I kicked and screamed the whole time. And until I went through every channel that I thought would work to get sober, and it didn't, did I decide to experience those 12 steps. And when I experienced those 12 steps, it was the only thing that could rid me of the obsession or lift me from the desire to want to drink or drug. That was it. A power greater than myself had to do for me what I could not do for myself.
Right.
And when I was willing, able, ready, and open-minded to receive this information, it fucking worked. And go figure, I haven't had a desire once in 3 years and 2 months to pick up a drink or a drug.
Yeah.
Only because I got busy in the work.
Yeah. No, and it's crazy because I think some people, when they go into recovery or whatever, they go into a rehab or they go into meetings and they do that stuff, like the quick out is, oh, this God shit, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
You know, and like...
People don't really tend to find God until they get bad.
Yeah. Right, exactly. That and or like they just want to find a way out, and you can always find a way out. But the thing is, like, your God doesn't have to be some bearded dude in the sky that grants wishes. No. It doesn't have to be what your God is.
Absolutely.
Or what that guy's God is. It's like... It doesn't have to call it that either.
No.
And you can just be like, yo, what I realize is I don't control this world.
No.
And so I wandered into a place where some dude knew how to stop drinking.
Yeah.
So that guy could be the guy that just shows me how to do that. And if that means that I've got to accept that I don't have any control over my drink or my drug or this stuff, then that in itself is turning yourself over to the higher power. That in itself is going, shit, I don't get it. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I can't stay sober on my own, right? I cannot do it on my own. And I have some sponsees that have some issues with that God word. It's a very fucking intimidating word, if you will.
Yeah.
And we have to bring it. I said, look, you can't drink on your own. Clearly, us group of drunks can stay sober together. So maybe that could be your higher power, a group of drunks.
Yeah,
right? Because check out, it says I cannot control my drinking. My life is unmanageable, right? I'm powerless over drugs and alcohol, right?
Yeah.
Tell me if this doesn't prove that there's a power greater than ourselves. I went from being completely powerless over drugs and alcohol to now having complete power over drugs and alcohol. I've recovered from a hopeless state of mind and being. And now I have goals, I have dreams, I have aspirations. All through my higher power and the program that we work. But from being powerless, and it says I am completely powerless over a drink. I pick up one drink, I cannot tell you where I'll be, who I'll be with, or what I will be doing, and nothing is off the table, I promise you. I can go from that to being recovered, to sound mind and body. That's something more than me that did that for myself.
Yeah.
If I could do this on my own, I would not be here talking to you tonight, Rab.
Absolutely. And, dude, it's like, do you believe that I believe? That kind of idea. And the funny thing is, as you were just saying that right now, I remembered this moment of... And I don't know if I ever told you this, but so I had been sober and I wasn't living in Westchester anymore. I think I was either living out here or in Philly or something. And I was just driving through Westchester because I was going to visit like family. And I pulled down like that little turn to Chestnut Street where it like forks off at the beginning of the mm-hmm. town there. And I pulled up. And like, I saw you walking, like this must have been like probably 11 in the morning, 12, and you clearly had been fucked up, and like probably from the night before or just even still trying to figure out how to get something that day, and you were like you look like death, and I drove up and I was like, there's Novak. And I was like sober, and I was all of a sudden, I was like, I can't say what's up to him. And I just like kept driving. And I was like, man, I hope that dude figures something out. And I thought right then, I like sent a prayer up, just like, I hope that dude figures something out. Because I knew there's nothing I could fucking do to help you at all. and I looked at you, and when I was on the other side of the sobriety fence, you look like a stranger to me, and I spent all those years with you, and you're like a brother to me.
Yeah.
And I love you. And
I just got chills, man.
And I thought to myself, like, I can't fucking do anything. Yeah. I gotta keep going.
Yeah.
And all I could do was throw that prayer up and just kind of hope that someday you found your way. And it's just fucking rad to think about how I saw you like that and how I see you like this. Like, before we started, I said, like, look at you all put together. Look at it. But it's fucking rad to see that. And it's amazing to see what a program can do for people that are struggling.
Yeah.
What it did for me, and then what it did for you. And
it can do for countless others.
Right.
Like, this is open knowledge. It's free for the taking. They're not selling it to the cool kids in the bathroom.
Yeah. You know? Well, the people that think they're cool.
Whatever it takes to get you to fucking come in.
Yeah.
But that was the thing when the preacher in my mother's church, Father Mike saw my mother crying in the pew, and Father Mike walked down the aisle, my mother's crying in the pew, and Father Mike says, "Miss Pat, what's wrong?" And Miss Pat says, "Brandon, Father Mike, it's Brandon. He's never been worse. I've sold homes. I've financially drained my bank account several times. There's nothing left I can do for him. So I went to God with one prayer." And Father Mike said, "Yeah, Miss Pat, what's the prayer?" "Miss Pat, my mother says, Father Mike, it's simple. The prayer consists of, God, please cure him, kill him, or kill me. I can't take it anymore." And Father Mike looked at my mother for the first time in his life, and he screamed at her. He said, "How dare you go to God with a plan like that about your son? You don't know what God's plan is for him. I don't know what it is, and Brandon doesn't know what it is." And I always say, thank God I didn't know what it was, because I would have fucked it up. Yeah. I would have made a left when I should have made a right. I would have went around it when I should have went through it. You know, and that goes, you know, there's a whole theme here. You know, I went from possessing that job of knowing to coming to the realization that I know that I don't fucking know, being beaten into a state of reasonableness, and learning that the common denominator in my problems is me, right? The only thing that blocks me from getting better is me, because then I started doing that work, that internal work that's suggested to us in the program that we attend, and I learned just what you said a few minutes ago, that drinking is not my problem. It has nothing to do with my problem. Yes, it's the fuel that fired me into my 13th inpatient treatment center, but that's not the problem. It's the solution. You take my solution away, I'm left with the problem, which is my thinking, my attitude, my behavior. So I realized that, like, I know that I don't know, and I know that a power greater than myself does for me what I could not do for myself, because if justice was due, I'd be dead years ago.
Yeah.
If I got what I deserve.
Well, we say that about you. We'd be like, damn, this dude is like a cockroach. Yeah, he just keeps going.
Like the Baltimore cockroach.
Yeah, and it was like, man, when the world ends, guys,
scurrying around.
Going on?
You know.
But that, I mean, that's a joke, because it is just fucking miraculous that you didn't die out there doing what you're doing. But it's amazing that you didn't, and that you're out and you're doing your thing. And dude, I love just watching you, you know, continue to have dreams and do what you're doing. And you're out here now. You just did like another.
Yeah.
You did like an appearance on a show. And then you've got the Brandon Novak Chronicles, that graphic novel, which is awesome. I took a look at it.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that, because it's the first ever addiction graphic novel to be done, which is, I think, is really monumental. I think it's groundbreaking. And the reality is that what I'm trying to do is I work in the drug and alcohol treatment field. I help people get help. I travel around. I'm a motivational speaker, blah, blah, blah. And everywhere I go, they say, how do we lift the stigma? How do we lift the stigma? Depending upon one's perception, the stigma is, you know, lifting, because the death toll is rising. So depending upon one's perception, like, it's a good thing or it's a bad thing. The stigma of addiction, you know what I mean? Because the reality is, the disease of addiction does not discriminate. From jail or jail, the White House or the outhouse, the results are all the same, and one out of five people will be affected. Today in the nation, 179 people will die as a direct result of an opioid overdose. That's worse than the Vietnam War. That's worse than the peak of the AIDS outbreak. And the sad thing is that all these deaths are preventable. So what I did with this graphic novel is, I'm just trying to think of another way to make addiction, alcoholism, be more of a open dinner table conversation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just in this prevention work that I do or this advocacy work, there's no margin for error, yet it is impossible to do perfect. And because we're not in a opioid epidemic, we're in an opioid pandemic. 179 people a day today die. I'm a big fan of doing something. And if something doesn't work, we learn from that something and we do something else.
Yeah. You know? No, I mean, that's an awesome point of saying, like, helping it to become like a dinner table discussion, because I think what happens is parents are afraid and they know what's happening there. They can sense what's happening. They're afraid to say anything.
Yeah.
And then the kids are afraid to say something. And I can say honestly firsthand, that's what saved my life, is that, you know, my mom, and she's helped you out, you know, and so, like, she was the type that I could tell everything. I call my mom, like, Mom, I had sex with a hooker in Mexico, and I did all this coke, and my heart feels like it's gonna blow out of my chest. Like, I think I'm having a heart attack, and I probably have AIDS because I just had sex with this hooker and whatever. And she's like, ah, Christian, geez, okay, hold on, take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Do this. My mom would literally talk me off the ledge while I'm sniffing coke and having sex with prostitutes, because she was like, he feels comfortable enough to come to me, and there's nothing I can do. So my mom prayed forever.
Yeah.
And so she was like, I'm not going to sit here and be mad at him.
Mm-hmm.
This is what addiction does.
Yeah.
But I am going to try to help him breathe his way through this.
Absolutely,
and do this.
Man.
And then we can talk future. And she was the one that took me to get help and did that. So, like,
and now you're sitting here with coming up with 9 years sober.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that
was allowed to be a discussion.
Exactly. And that's what I feel lacks the most in this world, is three simple words: empathy, sympathy, and compassion. And that's why I make it a point. I don't talk to people or at people, but I talk with people. I don't tell you where I think you should be or where I feel you should be headed. I remember one of the most profound points in my drinking and drugging life, career, if you want to call it that, was ending up on life support, waking up after life support for 7 days, and this triage nurse walked up to me, and she said to me, she said, I'll never forget it. She said, sweetheart, how are you? She didn't say, what are you using? How much have you been using?
Right.
How long have you been using? What's your discharge plans? She says, sweetheart, how are you? And not only did she ask me how I was doing, she cared about my fucking answer. You know how long it had been since anyone talked with me, not to me or at me?
Dude, that's
empathy,
that's
something
it.
About, and it made me feel humanized. Because I was so dehumanized for so long, the
you're
abnormal
just a number.
Became the normal.
Like, that's what I was
level.
Thinking when you said it. Like, you're just a number. They're like, oh, we're going to mark this down. You're going to be dead soon, whatever, blah, 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 blah.
I felt like I mattered.
That's fucking amazing.
And that's what I want to convey, is that, like, it's okay. It's cool.
Right.
Together we can do this. You know, it's going to be okay.
And that's it, man. It's like, I think they say this a lot too in the program, is like, you're not a bad person becoming good. You're a sick person getting well.
Yeah. And that's what I taught, you know, including myself. I and my sponsees I work with, you know, they have something to say about somebody, this, that. And I said, they're sick. They're sick in their own way, just like you're sick in your own way. I'm sick in my... I didn't come in here because I'm a fucking gentleman and a scholar.
I didn't
feel like I needed a few more friends.
Wandering.
I came here because I fucking...
Hey, what's going on in here?
I rob you blind. I sell my ass. I fucking shoot dope. I try to bang my cousin. I fucking make my mother buy me a plot. I end up in prison every year. You know,
You,
that's why I'm here. I'm not here because I'm a fucking ace the exams.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck? And it's cool, man.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Well, that's awesome. So where do you get the Brandon Novak Chronicles?
Everything is encapsulated in my website. Just go to brandonnovak.com.
Okay.
And everything's there. And
you got the Dream Seller book there.
Yeah, the dream. Everything you want is there. It's real simple. brandonnovak.com. And if anybody is struggling and can't see past the bag, bottle, needle, or pipe, I'm here to tell you that the disease of addiction is not a death sentence. Your history does not have to dictate your future. And as long as you're breathing, it's never too late. And you can call me, and we can try to figure out something together. And that phone number, which is my personal phone number, is 610-635-9092.
Dude, that's awesome. And thanks for coming in, man. I love you, brother.
Love you too, man.
Hell yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, awesome.